Washington Seminar has quickly become an annual event for me. In this episode of the I Can't See You podcast, I'll tell you all about my trip to D.C., who we met with, and some cool places that we ate, as well as a museum I visited on my own before I came home.
From Studio C, welcome to the I Can't See You podcast with David. He can't see, but he's got a lot to say and a face for radio.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 61 of the I Can't See You podcast. My name is David, at David Benj on all the socials. Let's call this one the Roger Maris episode. And if you're not from the United States or you don't know baseball, you don't know who Roger Maris is, but he was the first guy to break Babe Ruth's home run record back in the day. And some books put a little asterisk next to his name and next to the record because he played it and played. They had more games in the season when he broke the record. I'm pretty sure he wasn't on steroids, though. So let's call this the Roger Maris episode and no asterisks required. At least we hope not for us here. So as I mentioned in the intro, I am just back from Washington, D.C., and I'm actually recording this. I had hoped to record it on Wednesday night when I got back, but I was just so tired and I just didn't feel great. And I know I'm battling something that I probably got from all those folks that we shook hands with and met with and everything else down in Washington. So pardon me if I sound a little off. I mean, I know I'm always a little bit off, but might be a little bit more so today. And I'm hoping that I don't have the sneezing fits like I had last night. So every year, the National Federation of the Blind has this thing called Washington Seminar. And what that basically is, a bunch of blind folks go to Washington. And again, for us here in suburban Philadelphia, it's a very quick couple-hour train ride, and we're in Washington, and it's not really too crazy. But people come from everywhere, every state, to meet with representatives in the House and senators. And so this year, I was teamed with Brian and Simon, and I'll talk more about them in a little bit. And we met with Scanlon and Doyle and Muser. That is Pennsylvania's 5th, Pennsylvania's 18th, and Pennsylvania's 9th congressional districts, respectively. And we actually didn't get to meet, unfortunately, with the actual Congress folk. We got to meet with their staff, and some are a little bit more receptive than others. And it was just—it's just nice to get the word out on the things that are important to us. And each year, the National Federation of the Blind comes up with an agenda with three things that they want to focus on. And a couple of them were holdovers from last year, which are very important. And I'm sure I've talked about them probably more than you want to hear. The GAIN Act, which is H.R. 3929, is one that I know I've complained about because it really affects me and affected me from going to the gym because I couldn't operate the elliptical and the treadmill because I can't see the touch screens and there's no way around it. And, you know, it's fine for doing a warm-up or a cool-down where you just want to hit start and go, and you can kind of find that. But, you know, if you're doing cardio and you want to raise the elevation a little bit, the incline, and then, oh, I did it too much, so then you can lower it. You can't have somebody standing there for an hour while you're on your walk or run or whatever you're doing. So it just infuriates me when anybody brings that up because it's just not fair. And that's not even half of it, because some of the other things that it applies to are like home medical devices. I mean, you're talking about life-threatening things that if you're blind and you can't operate these certain pieces of equipment, you know, how are you going to survive? You know, in other parts, other things, washing machines, dishwashers, microwaves, you know, cooktops and ovens, things like that. And it's just so important. And it does get frustrating for us, you know, when we can't do it on our own or we have to pick up our phone and use Seeing AI or, you know, why can't it talk like my phone talks to me? And that was one of the things. And to me, that was the most important. I mean, there were a couple other important issues, which I won't bore you with at this point, but that's why we were in Washington. And it's for us, for me, it was 2 days. I stayed 2 nights. I went down on Monday, the 10th, and came back February 12th. And I always like to fit in some sightseeing, which I'll talk about in a bit. But I'll start off from the beginning. And you know, when you go away, you know how it is when you're getting ready. Oh, what did I forget? Ooh, how about this? Did I remember that? And so Liz helped me pack the night before, which I don't know that I'm going to do that again, because usually when I pack, I know where everything is in my bag and I know that I've got what I need because I've laid it out on the bed and then I systematically put it in to fit it in. But Liz had pretty much, after I had pulled everything and put it on the bed, she had packed it. And, you know, as I was putting the stuff on the bed, it wasn't all on the bed for me to touch and feel and then put in. So I was a little nervous when I got down to Washington, particularly because some of the things that I took down that I was going to wear were hanging on a drying rack, and we had to let them stay until I actually left on Monday morning because they were still a little damp on Sunday night. So as I'm packing these things, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what else is in here? Did I remember everything? You know, I didn't know if I was going to have to go commando one day, whatever. I mean, I'm sure you don't want to picture that. So that made me a little nervous, probably more so with, you know, things like mouthwash and toothpaste and things like that. Even though Liz and I had gone over it, I, you know, didn't physically touch it and put it in the bag, into the toiletry bag and then into the suitcase. So, you know, and when I opened the suitcase, I couldn't find the toiletries because they weren't in where I normally put them, in a pocket inside the suitcase. So that made me a little nervous. And then of course, you know, you have 10 million things and you only have time to do three. So, you know, everything I did that morning just took me forever. I poured my tea to have my hot tea before, you know, after I had breakfast, you know, and I didn't hold on to the strings hard enough. So of course they went in. So when the timer went off, I had to fish them out, you know, with a fork. And again, you know, not being able to see well, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do. Just little things like that, having to open the paper towels because there's none on the roll, you know, none hanging there in the kitchen, you know, just every little thing. And I got a little worried because on Friday I had done an event with Trish and Catherine at the Penn Museum, which I may have talked about in the last episode. And we were training some folks from the Grounds for Sculptures in Hamilton, New Jersey. And that is just such an awesome organization. The fact that they care so much about wanting to help blind folks and visually impaired folks when they come to visit their property, and it's a very big property, something like 42 acres and these giant sculptures and all sorts of things. So, you know, it wasn't their first time being trained on how to help blind and visually impaired people enjoy their place. Anyway, then off of that rabbit hole that I could go down there and talk all about that. It was pouring down rain that morning. There were severe thunderstorm warnings, a tornado warning here in suburban Philadelphia that morning. And it was raining so hard that instead of waiting outside for the bus for 10 or 15 minutes where there's not any kind of covering, I decided to take an Uber. And the Uber was, I was waiting and waiting and waiting, and he finally showed up, and I started to worry that I was going to miss the train into Philadelphia to go to the Penn Museum. And then once he picked me up, he apologized, the driver apologized, and, you know, it is a little funny with their GPS. I've seen it happen when I've been in the car, where for whatever reason, our building is set back a little bit off of South Chester Road. So when an Uber driver is driving, they think that our building is in the neighborhood behind our building, and you can't get to our building from that neighborhood. So as soon as I get an Uber, I usually will tell them, I'm visually impaired, you're going to have to call out my name when you pick me up. And also, we are located between the Nissan dealership and the bridge that goes over I-476. And it's a little tiny driveway, so you might miss it. But we're in between there. That's what you got to look for. And of course, he must have not read that and got hung up. And he was driving around driving around the neighborhood, he said, for a couple of minutes behind our building. And he finally got me. And he, again, like I said, he apologized. And then we go. And as we're sitting there in the car driving towards the train station, which, again, is only about a mile away, which on a nice sunny day is not a big deal. But on a day where it's raining and not a nice day, you know, I didn't want to walk it because I didn't want to be soaking wet by the time I was helping do this presentation to these folks for the grounds of sculpture. And I hear the GPS say, enter the roundabout and take the first exit, Rutgers Avenue. Well, this roundabout in Swarthmore, which they put in, and I am usually not a big fan of roundabouts, but this just looks so nice. This whole area, they made it look so nice, and it's so much better than it was when there were four or five roads going into Route 320 Southchester Road. And right there is where it may switch from Southchester Road to Northchester Road. It doesn't matter. It's very nice there. So there's around five different places you could go from this roundabout. The first one is Rutgers. The second one is called something like Station Square. That's where you have to go to get to the train station. It's directly in front. Southchester Road is the third exit from the roundabout, which goes under the station. So I told the driver, I said, you don't want to take the first exit onto Rutgers. You take the second one, which is a little tiny one where you go into the Swarthmore Business District. Well, he didn't listen to me and he turned down Rutgers Avenue. And I said, you just took the first exit, didn't you? And he said, yeah. He said, that's what the GPS told me. I said, I told you that wasn't right. I said, you had to take the next one. And so he turned around and then there was some traffic. So, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, man, I am going to miss this train because, you know, it's around, I don't know, 10 of 11 or something like that. And the train comes at, you know, 10:54. Now, I already had my ticket because I usually like to pre-buy them when I can get to the ticket booth, whether it's in Swarthmore or in Center City, Philadelphia. So I had my ticket. That wasn't the issue, but I really had to catch this train. And so we finally turn around and we pull out and he goes the right way after driving over a curb or two. And I get out of the car and I thank him. And you know, I go and I wait for the train and it's, again, it's like 10:51 or 10:52. And I'm thinking, okay, yeah, you know, I just made it. Well, the train ended up being late. So it was late a couple of minutes. So I had no trouble and I was really worrying for nothing. So when I went on Monday, I kind of cringed. Again, it was another rainy day. And this time I had a suitcase. So I didn't want to wait for the bus because now I had a hard time that I had to be in Philadelphia. Had I missed the one into Philadelphia for the training, there would have been another way that I had time to do. If I had missed this one to Philadelphia, I would have missed my Amtrak train to Washington, which I definitely didn't want to do. So when I ordered my Uber, and I ordered it at around, again, the train is at, you know, 10:54 or whatever, I ordered it around 10:30 or 10:35 or something like that. And I order it from the lobby of our building because I want to make sure I'm down there and it gets everything right. So I'm down there and I'm waiting. And again, it was raining, so I didn't go outside. I waited outside under there's an overhang on the walk into our building. And I'm waiting, and the guy pulls up, no problem. He comes in, he pulls up right to where I'm waiting. I get in, we go to the station, and, you know, I tell him, I said, the roundabout's a little tricky. Actually, take the second one. He said, oh, yeah, I'm familiar with it. So he knew, you know, maybe he's from the area. I don't know. But it was so different how quickly we got there and how much less stress there was waiting and then getting there, you know, that I actually was there a little early. Fortunately, it wasn't too cold out, so I was waiting. At that point, I was waiting outside, so it wasn't a problem. You know, so I get into, take the train, go into 30th Street Station in Philadelphia. And because I don't go to Washington but once a year on the train, I don't remember what track it is and where I have to go. So I find the information booth, and of course they immediately look at me and they say, oh, I'll help you. You know, I don't need you to get up. If you just tell me, don't point, which he may have done. He said, you know, I said to him, where, you know, what track do we go to for, you know, and it was, I think it was train 195 or 95. I don't remember. I think it was 95, actually. he says, oh, it's right over there. I said, well, could you tell me where that is? And he said, well, let me take you, instead of just answering my question. So he takes me, he says, we'll go over to the Red Cap. And I said, okay, I don't really need the help, but okay, you know, you want to take me over there? Fine. So we go over there, and there's this, it's interesting now that I think about it. Go over there, and a guy greets me. His name is Carl. There was another guy there named Jerry, which coming home yesterday, there was another Red Cap named Jerry. They were definitely not related, but both very friendly. So Carl takes me, he said, let me have your bag, and I'll take it down when we're ready to go down. I said, okay. Because we're going to go down in the elevator instead of the, on the escalator, which, again, it's not easy. You don't really have a hand because I have one hand taking my suitcase and I have one hand on my cane. So it's, it gets tricky if I wanted to get Starbucks or something. I can't do it. While at 30th Street Station, once I found out where I was going, I went over and I bought some soft pretzels from Philly Pretzel Factory. So I would have for the ride down and, I have to take this medicine with food. I thought, okay, I'll have that for this. And, these little mini pretzels, there's like a row of five. And they're very good, by the way. I recommend them. Especially if you don't have access to an authentic Philadelphia soft pretzel. So we go back and we wait, and one of the other Red Caps comes up to me and said, you're on train 95, right? And I said, yeah. He said, okay, it's delayed 10 minutes. Okay, no problem. So I basically am there pacing back and forth, and another guy comes up to me and said, do you want to sit down? You can sit down. There's a bench. I'll take you to the bench. I'm like, no, I'm good. I prefer standing. I'm going to sit on the train for a couple of hours. So meanwhile, people are coming and going, and then this girl who is very bad at English, who only spoke Portuguese, which, the fact that she had the balls to travel on her own, somebody, one of the Red Caps says, hey, does anybody here know Portuguese? If you can believe it, there was a couple who said, yeah, we do. And so they helped, it wasn't great, but they were able to understand one another, and they actually were talking for a bit, and they were going to, the Portuguese girl was going to Boston. And as I'm standing there waiting, my train was supposed to leave before that train. That was train 174 to Boston, by the way, with stops along the way, of course. So I'm waiting and Red Cap comes up. Okay, your train's now 20 minutes late. I'm like, okay, no biggie. Well, then they do the announcement. Okay, train 174 is now boarding. And I hear a cart with luggage on it go away. And of course, because I can't see, I'm wondering, oh my gosh, is my bag on that cart or is it on another cart? So another Red Cap comes by and tells me, okay, it's 25 minutes. I said, I really got to ask you a question. I'm a little concerned. I heard the cart go away with luggage on it. Can you tell me if my bag is still here? And the person said, okay, the Red Cap said, you're on train 95 to Washington, right? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, let me take a look. He said, can you describe it? I said, I know it's black. He said, does it have, or she said, I don't know which it was. Does it have like a pink luggage tag? And Liz had put this, I guess it's a bright pink. And it, against the black, even I can notice it. And I said, yes. He said, or she said, yeah, okay, I see it over there. It's on this cart. And he taps the cart, or she taps the cart. And I said, okay. And I felt better about that because for a minute I was a little worried. I'm going to get to Washington. I'm not going to have my bags. The one thing about traveling by train is you always have your bag with you. So it's right there. And you know that it's there because you're touching it. And you don't have to look for it again because we can't see, it makes it that much harder to find. So, we go down on the train, we get on the train, I sit in the handicap, the person takes me and I end up sitting in the handicap seat facing backwards, which Liz can't stand, and it makes her feel sick when she goes backwards on the train. I have no problem with it. And the one nice thing about the handicap seats, they're very close to the bathroom. So I used my cane. But it's tricky on the train with it moving about. If you take the cane in there, sometimes it flies around and, you don't want that to fall down in the bathroom. As if you go back and listen to that bathroom episode, you know why, because I don't want to feel around on the bathroom floor for my cane. So I get to Washington and, on the way, just before we get there, you know, they asked, do you need a red cap? I said, no, I think I should be okay. Oh, you know what? We have to go down steps when we get to Washington, so I'm going to get you a red cap. I'm like, okay. I said no, but okay, sure. So, and it was weird because I don't know that I've ever gotten off or on a train by going downstairs. You know, I've done it a lot on the SEPTA regional rails, but Amtrak, I've never, you know, it's always been, you know, you walk right out, you mind the gap and you're good. So I go down these stairs, you know, the conductor takes my bag. She gives it to the red cap and I have my backpack on and she, you know, she's like, be careful going down the stairs. I'm like, I'm good. I'm okay. I get down to the bottom and she, takes my arm and she said, we're going to go in this cart. It's straight ahead of you. It's around, you know, 7 feet away. And I said, oh, I'm going to ride. And she's like, yes. I said, all right. I feel a little weird about that because my legs are fine. Other than the psoriatic arthritis, but okay, I'll go for the ride. So there's another guy up front and then the red cap gets on and he turns around and he looks at me and he said, oh, you're a little to the left. Could you sit in the middle of that seat? And I said, sure. So I slide over a little bit. So I'm right in the middle. So basically if he had a rear view mirror, which I don't think he had, he would see is my big bald head. So we're going and I notice it sounds really tight. And I said to him, oh, I said, is there a train on our right and a wall on our left? He's like, yeah. He said, it's really narrow here. And so make sure nothing sticks out because it will touch either the wall or the train. So he takes us around and then we go over some rail tracks and then we go outside the building. And again, it's raining down there too. Again, because it's only 100 miles away. You know, we're driving up the side of the building on the sidewalk, and then we get around to the front of the taxi stand. You know, he grabs me a cab, and, you know, I'm on my way to the hotel. And then when I get to the hotel, I'm a little concerned because I was taking somebody else's room who wasn't going because I was late to the game saying I was going to this because, you know, my mom was sick, and I was with her, and, you know, I either missed the emails or forgot about it or whatever. But, you know, so when I'm walking in the door, I'm thinking, am I going to have a place to stay tonight? Do I have to go to another, you know, another hotel? But fortunately, everything worked out because when I called to verify and confirm that I had that room, they didn't have me listed. They didn't have the guy who was going to be my roommate listed. They only had the guy who originally booked the room. And so, and a funny side note to that. So when I added myself to that room, and I thought it was funny that I could easily do that just by knowing the guy's name and that he was staying there the two nights that he was going to be staying there. So we go through all that and then I add my roommate who was going to stay for one night. His name is Eugenio. He's in the Greater Philly chapter and I really liked rooming with him. So, and I'll tell you more about him in a minute because his journey was just unbelievable. You know, so I go and I get the cards, I give my credit card and, you know, I ask for the late checkout because the guy whose room we were using, his name is Kirk, he also had an IHG rewards card and I couldn't put my IHG rewards card on. So, you know, but at least I was able to get the late checkout and I knew my train wasn't leaving until 3 on Wednesday. And so it was all good. And I get to the room and they tell me to take the back elevator because it's, you know, it's closer to the room, which was awesome, except for when there was an event going, you know, on Monday night when every blind buddy in the hotel was going to the same thing. So we're all trying to get on this elevator and there's only one. It's not where the main bank of elevators is. You know, so it took a while. But I get to the room and, you know, everything's pretty cool. There's two beds and whatever. So good to go. And I was happy about that. And, you know, I then had a phone call with, Lynn Heights, who is the president of the Pennsylvania affiliate, meaning the Pennsylvania, the National Federation of the Blind of Pennsylvania. And basically the way the NFB is made up, there's national, and then each state has what's called an affiliate. And then each affiliate has chapters. In Pennsylvania, there's around 10 chapters or so, mostly by location, but there's a couple, blind students. There's a blind business, chapter, things like that. So there's around 10 chapters in Pennsylvania. So I was talking to Lynn for a while, and I actually had run into her on the elevator. She had gotten on after I was on, as I was being as I was being sold a bag of Sour Patch Kids for $1 by the Maryland students division, and they didn't have chocolate, so Harriet would have cleaned up there because people were asking for chocolate from them. So maybe next year when I go, maybe I'll actually take M&Ms down. That's Harriet's thing. So I go and I get to the room and everything's good. So she says, when you get settled, give me a call. So I actually go to the room, drop my stuff off. There's a Starbucks in the hotel. I was very thirsty. So I went down, I got my iced tea and, I took 3 lemons with me. I actually ended up only using 2 because I didn't have iced tea one day because, we were so busy, and, I'll get into that in a bit. Had my iced tea and I was talking to Lynn for, 15 or 20 minutes. And then it was time to go down to the Great Gathering, which is when everyone who is there goes into this room. So imagine a room full of, 500 blind folks, and Mark Riccobono, who's the president of the National Federation of the Blind, basically hosts this and presents this this event. It's about 2 hours long, and they have other speakers. They have other folks from the NFB. They have, each year they have either a congressman or a senator. Last year it was Senator Grassley from Iowa. This year it was, I know his name is Bobby, from Virginia 3rd District. Bobby Scott, his name is. He spoke to us for a while. He was a primary sponsor for one or two of the bills in the House that I talked about at the beginning. And afterwards, we had set up, Lynn had asked if I wanted to join them for dinner, and there was about 7 or 8 of us for dinner that we went to at a place called Cafe Mozart. Now, before I get to that, if you can imagine a big room full of a lot of people, forget the fact that they're blind, but just a lot of people, imagine trying to find someone. Okay, now imagine closing your eyes and trying to find someone, just listening for their voice. There are just so many voices. So, I was walking around just hoping to hear either Lynn's voice or Joe's voice, who I knew was going to be there, or Simon's voice. And turns out Simon wasn't there yet, but I eventually found Lynn. And I ended up sitting next to Denise Brown, who is the president of the Greater Philly chapter. And so Denise and I were talking because she's also in this blind meetup group, Philly Meetup for the Blind. And, so we talked for a little bit, and then somebody came over and was giving Lynn the what for, because, you're not allowed to save seats for this and so forth and so on. And I said to Lynn, I said, look, I can stand in the back. I have no problem standing for this thing. If you want to give my seat, if one of those people needs a seat, So I got up, and I probably should have said something to Denise, because I got up pretty quickly, didn't say, hey, I'm going to go stand in the back so this person could have my chair. So hopefully she wasn't looking for me after, but more about Denise a little bit later. So we go through this, and then we go to the restaurant, and Lynn and a couple others go over a little early to grab the table, and then Brian, who I ended up being paired with, for these meetings with the Congress folk, he and I meet up in the lobby, and then we're waiting for another guy named Tom. And he finally comes, and then we get in a cab and we go over to this Cafe Mozart, which obviously Mozart is Austrian, so they build this place as a German style. I'm guessing they meant Austrian style because, Hitler also was Austrian, and everybody knows he ended up taking over Germany and winning in Germany and then annexing Austria. But whatever, it's Austria. It's a German speaking place, Cafe Mozart. And so we get there and, we don't know, we're about 10 to 20 minutes late from when the original party got there, maybe even a half an hour. So we don't know what arrangements they've made as far as paying. Usually when we have these groups get together, everybody pays for themselves. So Lynn would have paid for herself, and I for me, and Tom for him, and Brian for him, and then Emily, who was with us, her husband Matt and her daughter Angelina were there, so obviously they would have paid as one. Well, they didn't ask for separate checks at the beginning, and that became an issue at the end because they wouldn't split it for us. We can only do 4 credit cards for this bill, and again, there were, I guess, 7 of us. So we're like, okay, well, Brian was okay because he was going to pay cash. Tom was okay because he was going to pay cash. And Lynn was okay because she was going to pay cash. Well, there was an issue with the cash. And one of the people didn't put down what they said that they were putting down because it just didn't add up. You know, I think a 20 got mistaken and a 1 was given instead. And that dragged on for probably about 45 minutes as we tried to figure out, did we drop one on the floor? You know, it finally came down to, look, this person was the only one to give some dollar bills. They originally were supposed to pay $43, and then they ended up paying $46 because they had to figure for tax and tip. And, you know, Matt, who was cited, said, well, I have seven $1 bills here, so if you only gave me 6, I didn't get a dollar bill from anybody else. I was putting mine on the credit card. The only reason I was involved was because it delayed us from leaving. And it just became a big ordeal. I know I did an episode, Dan had asked about keeping your money and how do you know what your bills are. I don't do it. And I'm guessing this other person didn't do it, but a lot of blind folks, most blind folks, properly trained blind folks will fold each note a different way. So if you have 5s, they're folded a different way. If you've got 10s, they're folded a different way. You know, all the 10s are folded the same way, but they're folded differently from the 5s and differently from the 1s and differently from the 20s. I don't like it that way. It's too messy in my pocket. I just don't, you know, I don't particularly like to carry cash, but I know sometimes I have to. I like the ability to go back and look and see what my purchase was. Hey, they overcharged me. You know, you give cash and you have no idea. You know, what if the person, instead of giving, you know, what if he gave 3 20s instead of the 2 20s that he was supposed to? You know, you can't go back and get that back. So that just kind of put a damper on the evening because we were there so long afterwards. The food was good, though. I had a you know, I'm big into potato pancakes. I call them latkes. I'm sure the German place wouldn't call them latkes, but, and they didn't, they called them potato pancakes, but they were pretty good. I mean, they're not as good as Junior's in New York City, but they were good and I enjoyed them. And then I had a salad with some shrimp on it. And then I got the apple strudel for dessert because Lynn had gotten it another time she was there and said it was really good. I don't know that I would get the apple strudel again. I don't know that I would waste those calories. So that kind of was a damper on the ride home, you know, ride back to the hotel. And, you know, so that everybody split up at that point. You know, I went back to my room and, you know, Brian went to his and Tom went to his because we rode back together as well. So the next day we're going to meet with these Congress folks and a little bit on the way home, Brian had talked about, okay, you're going to talk about the Access Technology Affordability Act, which is basically just asking for tax credit over the span of 3 years of $2,000, up to $2,000 for the purchase of equipment. Again, I've mentioned it before, you know, equipment that allows me to do something that a sighted person does, you know, without this equipment is pretty expensive. And so in some instances, Simon has a device that costs $6,000. So it's only going to make a small dent in that. But, you know, still it's something and would be something. That's what I talked about. Brian talked about the GAIN Act, which I mentioned earlier. And then Simon talked about the AIM High Act, which is geared towards college students. You know, there are some programs, Blackboard, and I think one is called Canvas, that schools use, and they are not 100% accessible. From what Simon said, Canvas is more accessible than Blackboard, but still not 100%. So sometimes it may make it difficult for someone, someone who is blind, it might make it difficult for them to finish an assignment because it's not accessible and so forth and so on. And I'll tell you more about Simon. Simon is, he is just unreal because he's 17 or 18 years old. And this is like his seventh or eighth Washington seminar. He's been going there forever. And when he speaks, he sounds like he is a mature human being that would have a lot of years of experience. And I mean more than 17 or 18 years. And, you know, I'll talk more about him in a little bit. He does some podcasts and again, I'll talk about that in a minute. So we go to these different, our meetings were set up, were pretty compressed from, you know, 1 and then 2:30 and then 3:30. And again, the first one we met with, and we were really hoping to meet her, is Mary Gay Scanlon, who happens to be my rep and Simon's rep. She's Pennsylvania 5, and that's our district. So, you know, I've never met her, and you know, we were hoping to talk to her. Instead, we talked to Keanu, who was in the office, one of the staffers in the office, and he was, you know, cool about stuff. And actually, when he left the room, he actually said, "Okay, I'm going to leave. I'm going to open the door. I'll be right back with my cards, unless you want to follow me through the door. The door is opening on the, I don't remember what side, the left, I think it was." You know, and I'll give you my cards out in the lobby. And I started laughing and I started mentioning to Simon, because it's one of the things that we talk about on the Philly Touch Tours, things that you should do when you're with someone who is blind. And Liz doesn't do this. And I've mentioned this before, where Liz and I will be in the supermarket and she will walk away and I will start telling her a story. And the only one who hears it is the shopping cart. You know, so I said to him on the way out after he handed me his card, I said, you know, "How did you know to do that?" I said, "That is awesome that you did." And he said, "Well, I heard you guys doing it, you know, when you were coming in." I said, "Okay, cool. That's cool." So we met with him, and then we met with, I think her name was Kate, with Representative Doyle's office. And it was kind of funny that we met with her because the Pennsylvania State Convention is in November in his district out in Pittsburgh. So we were told to be nice to them. So we invited him to the convention and we did our thing. And she seemed pretty receptive. And again, they all do, because they're not the ones making the final decision. "Oh, yeah, this sounds like cut and dry stuff," and so forth and so on. Honestly, I don't believe any of them. Until you get to the person, the representative, and hear them say, "Yeah, I'm going to do it," I don't believe that they're going to do it. I just, I mean, listen, they're in Congress. I get it. You know, everybody, that's why I don't think we get to meet with them, because they don't want to say no, or they don't want to say, "Yeah, they're going to do it," and then they don't do it. Because then the next year when we go back, they're, you know, we're going to say, "Hey, why didn't you do it? You said you would." So we did that. And, then we took a picture in the, I think it was the Canon, the Canon office building, which, funny story, the first building we went to, I want to say is Rayburn. I'm not 100% sure. It's where Mary Gay Scanlon's office is. And we had to get, there's you know, tunnels underneath them that you can go from one building to the other, so you don't have to go outside and whatever. So we had trouble finding our way from the one building to Canon. And we get down to where we think we need to go, and we start to go a certain way. And a guy says, "Where are you trying to go?" And I said, you know, Simon, I think, was in front. And he said, "We're trying to go to the Canon office building." He said, "Oh, you have to go down one level and, you know, and then, you know, veer a little, blah, 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 and do this." And we said, "Okay." And then this other guy from the south says, "Oh, I'll help you guys out." And a really heavy southern drawl. And he said, "There's stairs right over here." He said, "Oh, they only go up." And he calls back over to the guy who Simon originally talked to, and he said, "Mark, where can I go?" And Mark points to this guy. "Put him on that elevator right there, and you know, go down one level." "Okay." He said, "All right, I'll help you guys out." He said, "Yeah, My name is Tim. I'm a freshman congressman from Tennessee, and I've since looked him up. He's from Tennessee, 2nd Congressional District. He's been in politics, it seems, for a good chunk of his life between state legislature and mayor of Knox County and things like that. But very cool. We all agreed that he was very cool, and he really helped us out. Honestly, when I saw him there, it looked like he was carrying pizzas, and I thought he was just, some delivery guy. So while I've never really had an interaction with someone from Congress or the Senate, I guess this kind of counts because, you know, we did interact and, you know, I didn't get a picture with him. We didn't shake hands or any of that. But, you know, we did interact. And so that was a step better than last year, because last year I didn't have any kind of interaction with any member of Congress. So we finished up and we go back to the hotel for about an hour. And Simon, who does a couple of other podcasts, and I've mentioned the one, Blind Abilities. He does some help with that. And he's like, oh, I want to interview you for Blind Abilities. We can talk about Washington Seminar and blah, blah, blah. So we do that. And again, he is just incredible with the words that come out of his mouth and how mature he sounds. And I always can't believe, you know, that he thinks to say these things and then says them. Trish from Philly Touch Tours says he should do a TED talk. And I think that would be so awesome if he did. And again, he's a junior in high school, and he is just incredible. And you know, so I did the one interview with him, and we ran out of time to do the second one for a different podcast. He did not go to the congressional reception, but at that point, Brian had texted me. So we go over to, we grab a cab and we go over to this reception over in the, Kennedy Room of the, I don't remember the name of the building. It's another one of the, congressional office buildings down there, begin with an R, I think. Well, the line to get in, it took us about 40 minutes to get in, because if you can imagine, you know, a couple hundred blind folks, you know, lined up, and you got to go through, and the guards are having to, you know, guide the folks one way or the other, put all the stuff in your pockets in this plate. And then it goes through the, you know, like the airport type of scanner. And then you have to walk through a metal detector. And, but they were so patient and, you know, so helpful. You know, so then, you know, we get through that finally. And I have to tell you, there was for a few moments while we were there in line, you know, for maybe half of the time, the guy in front of me had a guide dog, and I think it was a guy, had a guide dog that, you know, would just look around every so often, and my hand was down, and every once in a while, you know, he'd come up and brush against my hand, so I'd pat him a couple of times, and, you know, again, not supposed to do that, but nobody was going anywhere because the line was, you know, not moving. So we go to this congressional reception, and the fact that it was at the not at the hotel and in one of the office buildings made it more accessible, if we're talking about access, made it more accessible to getting more representatives and senators there. In fact, I want to say there was probably 7 or 8. Senator Casey from Pennsylvania was there. Donna Shalala was there, who, you know, has been a secretary in the Clinton administration and then was also president of a place that I went to school at, the University of Miami. I think she was also president of the University of Wisconsin. She ran for Congress, and she even made a joke about it being, you know, 70 years old, in her 70s, and, you know, going to Congress and whatnot. So they all gave little speeches, and it was nice. And, you know, it was, I got within, you know, maybe 10 or 12 feet from all of them. And it was just very cool to be there and listen to them. And, you know, they talked a little bit about the different bills that are pending and, you know, how they're helpful to us. Oh, the majority leader, Steny Hoyer, was there. You know, just very cool to be, you know, to be in that room with those folks. So after, I get a text, you know, after the speeches are done, but the reception is still going on, and there was food and drink and whatnot. And I didn't have anything to eat or drink there because it was so crowded by the food. I didn't want to mess with going over there. And I knew we were going to have something for dinner, whether I was going to go to Lynn's room and have pizza, or if I heard from Eugenio and Denise if we were going to go to this place called Ooze and Oz. And at the end of the event, or, you know, at the end of the speeches, I get a call from Denise saying, hey, are you still interested in going to Ooze and Oz? And I said, oh, absolutely. And so she said, all right, we'll meet in the hallway out afterwards. And, you know, made it a little bit easier than the day before when you're trying to find, you know, a group of people in a sea of, you know, 400 or 500 blind folks. This was, as you know, every, you know, basically going through a cattle chute out into this hallway. So it was a lot easier to listen, and people were leaving at different times, so it made it easy. So when Eugenio got in, and originally Eugenio was going to come down on Monday and leave on Tuesday after everything, but he had a family member that had needed some assistance, some medical assistance. So he wanted to wait and come down for Tuesday and stay over Tuesday night, which was fine. He was only going to stay the one night. So at around 6:44 on Tuesday morning, I get a text message from him saying he was down in the lobby. I'm like, oh my God, he's down in the lobby. What time did he leave Philadelphia to come to Washington? And so I texted him back. I said, you could do one of two things, room 769. You can either come up and I'll let you in, or, you know, go to the desk, check in and grab a key and just come in. And he said, and then he calls me. He said, yeah, I was already there. I said, oh, you were? Why didn't you knock? He said, well, I didn't want to disturb you. I said, well, what time did you get here? He said, I've been at the hotel since 5:30. I said, what time did you leave? And he said, oh, I left around 2. So he comes up. I said, all right, because I had deadbolted the door. So he had tried to get in. He couldn't get in because the door was deadbolted. You know, he had his key. So he comes in and we talk for a while. And I said, you know, I asked him about, I asked him if he got any sleep. Did you go to sleep, you know, and then wake up early to get the, he ended up taking Megabus. And he's like, no, I just took a cat nap on the bus and that was it. And he ended up going the whole day on that, you know, I don't know how long he slept on the bus, but, you know, it's just incredible to me that, you know, that he did that. But, you know, he goes to all his meetings and I think he was paired with Denise. And, but while we were standing there talking in the room, you know, we were talking about an hour to an hour and a half before he had to go, his meeting started earlier. I was mentioning mac and cheese, and on the way down on the train, I remembered seeing a Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives episode where there was a place in Washington, and I never put the two together. Hey, I'll be in Washington for Washington seminar, and I could go to this place. And I texted Liz on the train. When I was on the train coming down, I said, you know, do you remember that Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives where Guy went to a place that had mac and cheese? It was basically a soul food place. And she didn't remember, but she looked it up and she saw everything about it. And it was on Avenue U in the Northwest near Howard University, which, of course, when you have soul food and you're near Howard University, a good combination, I'm sure. Well, you know, I'm talking about mac and cheese, and Eugenio's telling me about places in Philadelphia I could go, Smokin' Betty's and a place called Devin's. And she's like, I bet Denise wants to go to a place like that if she hasn't already gone. And, you know, so of course Denise was in. So I was very excited because, you know, I was okay going by myself, but it's, you know, it's better when you go with people. And so there was 9 of us that went, and we didn't go to the one on Avenue U because that one doesn't have seating. So we went to the one 5933 Georgia Avenue or Street. I'm not sure which, but 5933 is the address, Ooze and Oz, and it was awesome. So, you know, 4 of us get in a cab or an Uber over there, and we get out, and the driver's trying to help us. You know, the sidewalk is wide, and then there's like a cement wall. Pardon me for hitting the microphone. I'm gesturing with my hands. Again, one thing you never do with blind folks is you gesture with your hands because they can't see it, but I do it all the time. So there's this wall. So the driver said, well, there's a wall directly in front. You have to go around. So we all go around this wall. And as we get closer to the restaurant, the door opens up and this girl goes, hey, I got you. Come on in. Come on in. And, you know, she's guiding us and telling us what to do. And I end up holding the door so that, you know, the others can walk in. And again, there's only 4 of us in this group because that's all how many people fit in the car. And it was me, Eugenio, Denise, and a girl named Joyce who was from Silver Springs, Maryland, and in one of the chapters down there. So we get there and we're waiting. And this, the girl who welcomed us in, who I thought knew either Joyce or Denise, because she was so friendly, and I just thought, oh yeah, she knows them, and that, man, we're getting the royal treatment here. Her name is Jasmine. She was also our waitress. She reads the menu to us, everything on the menu if we needed her to. And, you know, so the four of us finally get tired of waiting, and Denise says, let's just order, and then, you know, they can order when they get here. So we ordered, and then the other group shows up, and there were five of them. And they were all from Virginia, I believe. Earl I had met last year, and then I met, I can't remember his name now. Met another guy who does the business, Randolph Shepherd business stuff down in Virginia. And I think his name was Andre. Yeah, it was Andre. So he actually lived in Philadelphia for a while. So he knows Lynn and Jim and folks from the Pennsylvania affiliate. So we're sitting there and we're waiting for our food. And the reason I wanted to go there was for the mac and cheese. I've been dying for mac and cheese. And so I talked Eugenio into it. And then he talked Denise into it. I thought she had been there before. She had never been. Nobody with us had ever been. And while we were sitting there waiting after we ordered, you know, Eugenio says to me, you know, this is on you. If it's not good, we're going to blame you. And it was awesome. And Jasmine was awesome. It turns out Jasmine is a senior graduating in May at Howard University. She already had a finance major. She already has a job lined up with Amazon. She was just so attentive to us. And again, you know, it's like 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night on a Tuesday. So it wasn't busy. But she was just amazing. And I think even though we were a big party and she did separate checks right off the bat, I mean, it was no problem for her. She helped us out. I mean, it was so night and day from the night before at the Cafe Mozart that it was just unreal. First of all, the way she greeted us when we got there, and that's what Joyce was saying. She said, you know, I'm going to give her a tip on top of if they charge the fee, which they did. And I said, yeah, I was planning on as well. And I know Joyce gave her something. I don't know what. I gave her an extra $10. I think Denise also did the same. I mean, this girl was just incredible. And it's just, you know, there are some people that are just, you know, born like that to help and want to do as much as they can and be as attentive as they can. And she was just amazing. So, I said, can I give a tip on top of that, you know, that little bit that they took? And she's like, yeah, how much you want to give? I said, $10. She said, oh, thank you very much. I said, well, you need money to move to Seattle, right? And she said, yeah. And she laughed. So it was just so different. I mean, it was, again, the food was good the night before at Cafe Mozart, but this was just overall more enjoyable. And it was more enjoyable because it ended well with, you know, having the waiter or the waitress in this case that we had compared to the waiter the night before, who was friendly and, you know, but he wasn't as cheery and wasn't as bubbly and wasn't as accepting and certainly wasn't as attentive. So again, that's oohs and ahs. I also had grilled shrimp with my double side of mac and cheese, which was was awesome. So if you're in Washington, they have a takeaway place on Avenue U, Howard University, also by the 930 Club, which I looked to see. And Saint Motel was playing there on Tuesday night, so I considered going to that as well, but it was sold out. And I certainly would have gone to that on my own. But the one we went to, if you want to go and sit down, it's at 5933 Georgia. It's in the northwest section. And I want to say it took around 10 or 15 minutes from our hotel, which was on C Street. It was awesome, especially if you like mac and cheese. So go there. And if Jasmine hasn't graduated yet, you go before May, you know, wish her the best. Again, incredible. She was just unbelievable. So we get back to the hotel and I actually fell asleep in the Uber on the way back. And, so we get up and I was just exhausted. And, so I'm going up to the hotel room and Eugenio says, well, I'll go up and I'll drop my food off. He ordered too much because they had stuff to eat at the reception. So he leaves the stuff and he's like, I'm just going to go downstairs for a few minutes. There's a sports bar downstairs in the hotel. And I was on my phone for about a half an hour, 45 minutes, and I was just so exhausted. I said, you know, I'm going to charge my phone and go to sleep. And I went to sleep both nights either at 12:30 or earlier. And usually when I am at home, 3 o'clock is about the earliest I go to sleep, unless I have to be up real early the day after. So, you know, so that was incredible. So he came in after me, and I don't think he slept under the covers, because I looked at his bed the next day. If he slept under the covers, he made the bed so well. I mean, it looked like it was perfect. So, and I haven't talked to him since. I didn't notice that until after he left. So he left because he was coming back early on Wednesday. And, you know, it's interesting about the hotel, because obviously it's a struggle for them to do everything. Because again, they have all these blind folks there. You know, there's so much more that they have to do. And for the most part, they're very, very attentive to us, whether it's in the Starbucks. You know, the guy saw, I had ordered for breakfast on Wednesday, I'd ordered a sandwich and a tea. And of course the brewed tea I get right away, but the sandwich you have to wait for. And when he called out that it was my sandwich, you know, I said, I'm right over here. And he saw that, you know, I couldn't see because he saw my cane. He said, oh, hang on 1 second. I said, okay. And he put it in a bag with napkins, you know, a bag with handles. So it made it that much easier to carry because I ended up going back to my room to eat it. So it's just amazing the way people go out of their way to help us out, to the point where at one point I was waiting for someone to come out of the restrooms and a person saw me there. Can I help you find something? Are you okay? I said, yeah, I'm just waiting for my friend to come out of the men's room. And, you know, so that part is great. As far as the hotel goes, you know, the first day I took a shower, and it took forever for the water to heat up, and to the point where I let it run for 5 or 10 minutes, and it wasn't getting warm. So I get in, and I had to actually get into the shower like you get into a pool when it's a little cold. You know, first your feet, then up your legs a little bit, then to your torso and so forth. It was unreal. So finally, around halfway through my shower, it got warm for a little bit. And then got cold again right at the end. So it was brutal. The next day I thought, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to turn the water on. I'm not getting in until it's warm. So I was texting with Jane. I was texting with Liz. And finally I walk into the bathroom and it felt warm. I could feel the steam in there. So I said, you know, I texted Jane. I said, shower's warm. I'm going to get in. I get in, I get under the shower, get wet, start to do the shampoo. All of a sudden the water starts to get cold. And I'm like, oh my God, are you kidding? So, you know, I try to finish up. I mean, I am uncontrollably shivering as I try to rinse the shampoo off. And then I step out of the water to, you know, to put the soap on. And, you know, as Lynn said, you know, you were probably shaken enough to shake the soap off. And I probably was. But by the time I needed to rinse the soap, it got warm for a long enough time to finish the shower. And it certainly helped me get through the shower quickly. And usually I don't, but, you know, I need that warm water to get my fingers moving, my take some of the pain away from the psoriatic arthritis. So I get out of the shower, I finish everything I'm doing, and I, you know, I have a few hours. And last week or week before, the person who used to live in our condo, the person we bought it from, got some mail from the Museum for American Jewish Military History. And I thought, well, man, is that specific. And I thought, you know, we have this shadow box here. You know, it'd be pretty cool to go over to that museum. And it wasn't very close to the hotel, so it wasn't really walkable, especially, you know, the weather wasn't 100% great while we were down there. It was overcast. It rained from time to time. So I took a cab there and ended up taking an Uber back because, you know, it's hard for me to hail a cab because I can't see it. You know, on the way over, get into the cab and I say 1811 R Street Northwest, and the cab, you know, and he says, okay. And I said, yeah, it's the Museum for American Jewish Military History. And he says, yeah, I know. And I notice that when he says that, he's got a bit of an accent. So I don't know, maybe he was Indian, maybe he was Pakistani. And I'm thinking, oh my God, if he's Pakistani, he might hate my guts because I'm Jewish. You know, I'm going to this, you know, Jewish museum. But, you know, by the time we got there, you know, he was asking me some questions when I got out about being blind and why are so many blind people in Washington and, you know, for this time of year, you know, this for that couple days. And, you know, I explained everything to him and, you know, and he was friendly enough when I left, you know, as I paid. And he actually asked me this after I had paid. So, you know, so I go into this museum and it's not very big. It seems like it's in a row home. It's in the DuPont Circle area of Washington. And I say that like it sounds like I know where I'm talking about. I've seen it on House Hunters. I don't really know what that means. So I really know nothing about Washington. And Washington is just such a different city, it seems, to get around. I've never really walked around it, you know, on my own. And, you know, maybe next year if the weather's nice. You know, so I go through this museum and, you know, again, I take my phone out. I use the app called Seeing AI and I walk around and, you know, I'm kind of looking and trying to figure out if they have, you know, would this be a good place to loan the shadow box that my mom had made up of my dad's stuff? And when I say stuff, it's his records when he was a POW from, you know, when the camp was liberated, somebody went in and grabbed all the records. So it's, you know, it's his information. It's got the profile and straightforward picture of him on this thing. Basically, like, you know, like you would see any prisoner have. You know, he was a prisoner of war for 13 months. And I'll put a picture of the shadow box up on the show notes page so you can have a look. But those of you who follow me on Facebook and Twitter know that, you know, I've posted, and Instagram, have known that I've posted that before. And I actually did a video from the museum. If you follow me or friend me on Facebook, you can have a look at that. You know, I don't know if it's it's exciting, but you'll get an idea of the museum. And you know, I was glad I went. I spent about an hour there and walked around and used the app to tell me what I was looking at. And I was, for the most part, I was the only one there. For a while, there was another person or two on the level that I was on. And as I was getting back in the elevator going to the main level, somebody was getting off. So, and then I rode the elevator going down the first time. There was a guy on the elevator, but I think he worked there, and he was going to an upper floor. So I was glad I made it over there. It was very interesting stuff. And, you know, basically talked about Jewish folk who fought in, you know, all the wars, you know, that the U.S. was in. And I was, the biggest takeaway I got from the museum was the fact that there were Jewish people that fought on both sides in the Civil War, which I kind of found that interesting. That kind of surprised me. But I enjoyed it. And, you know, then I got an Uber back to the hotel. And as I was going back to the hotel, I, you know, texting with, you know, with Jane, telling her what I was doing. And I sent her a couple of pictures. I took some blind selfies, which, you know, if you follow me on Instagram, you can check out there. I won't bore you on the show notes page with it because I took a few, as usual. But the video, you can, you know, again, follow me or friend me on Facebook and you can have a look at that. I can warn you, though, it is about 5 minutes long, so you may want to fast forward or something through some of it. I don't know. So I get back to the hotel and I'm in this elevator and, you know, I know a blind girl gets on because, you know, she says hello to me and I hear her cane tapping and we go up a floor or two and another person gets on and she says good morning and, you know, she's going to another level and, she said, how about that cold water? I said, oh, you had it too? And she's like, yeah, I evidently it was, you know, was for the whole hotel. She said, I called and complained and they comped me a night. So of course I called and complained because it was brutal, but don't get me wrong. If they want to do that again next year, I'm all for it because I only ended up paying for one night instead of two. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That shower, both showers were brutal. And, so, you know, it is what it is, but, you know, again, I was happy to, I was happy to get the night free. It, you know, it saved me about $225. But it, all in all, it's a great time to go and you're with other blind folks and, you know, again, and sometimes these blind folks are, you know, from, you know, other spots in the U.S., you know, like I said, the folks I had dinner with the one night were from Virginia. You know, I met some folks from Florida. And you know, again, we all have something in common, which is, you know, look, we can't see. And we're all fighting on the same team, whether you're, a Republican or a Democrat, you know, we all want the same thing. We all want to go to the gym and get on that elliptical and be able to use it. Man, that gets me so mad when I talk about that. I can't tell you, I feel bad for Brian because Brian brought it up in the car on the way home, like I said, and holy cow, it just gets me all riled up because it's, it just bothers me so much, and kind of as much as American Airlines does, getting me to Las Vegas 3 days after I was supposed to be there, and I missed half of the my first national convention. Thanks, American Airlines. I'll make sure I tag you in the hashtags, because you really messed me up. But I do appreciate you. This is a very long episode, and I appreciate you hanging in there and listening to episode 61, and maybe I should put an asterisk because it may be my longest episode yet. I appreciate everything you do by listening and rating and reviewing. And again, if you have any ideas for a show or comments, area code 646-926-6350. You can also email me at icantseeyoupodcast@gmail.com. That's icantseeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Remember, I can't see you is only 7 letters long, if you can believe that. It sounds like it's a whole sentence. I can't see you, icantseeyoupodcast@gmail.com. Catch all the previous episodes, all the other 60 are available at icantseeyou.com, icantseeyou.com. And again, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking in, and I appreciate all your support. Have an awesome day.
Thank you for listening to the I Can't See You podcast. Follow David on Twitter. He is at David Bench.